This is the Diamonds in the Desert podcast. Haley Stasiak and Jordan Hamm talking all things diamonds. We're going to start out here, Jordan. Let's just cut right to it with the news of Jake Lamb's season-ending surgery that he will be having on his left rotator cuff. Honestly, when the news broke and Tori Lovello said it would become between the, I believe he worded it as the conservative approach and the surgical approach, I think the general consensus of thought in the room was most likely surgical, if that was the option, because the surgical route is going to make it hopefully solved and rehabbed through these last 2 months and be ready for the next season. I think what Jake said with the conservative approach and his thoughts on taking that was that that approach might not work and he may have more issues down the line still. So that's why he opted for the surgical approach. He wasn't having a great last couple weeks when he came back off the DL from that injury. And obviously it was clearly still nagging him, and then he fully re-aggravated it. So I think this is going to be good to have him get this done, get it out of the way, come back healthy next year. Hopefully have a full complete season where he is first half, second half, the Jake Lamb that we know and is very, very good out there. Having Eduardo Escobar is proving to be a lot more beneficial than I'm sure the Diamondbacks anticipated here with Lamb going out.
Yeah, they have a very nice everyday option now to fill in for Jake Lamb with Eduardo Escobar. Anytime you hear the word fraying with any sort of body part, that sounds incredibly painful, and that I'm sure, you can't really quantify this, but I'm sure that affected his game so much, and that's one of the kind of the leading factors why you were seeing him have a down
year. And he did
year.
Say that he was telling coaches and trainers that he was feeling well, but he wasn't. And obviously, Lovello is they're going to trust him with that. But he did say in hindsight, he felt like he was feeling well, but he always knew that something was off, and now he realizes that that was what was off.
And what pro athlete isn't going to say?
Well, of course, yes.
I'm totally fine. This isn't affecting my play at all, you know. So, it's now interesting to see how they are now using that open roster spot, because you do have Escobar here now. That has filled a hole nicely. Chris Owings has been optioned down to AAA. I was there on Sunday shortly after that happened. Lovello said he expects that to be a short trip down there. He just has to kind of get his mind right, get some mechanics done, and get those consistent reps, because this Diamondback team offensively, the depth there is very impressive, but that means
somebody's not getting those reps.
Even if you're AJ Pollock, you're not playing every day anymore. Even if you're David Peralta, you're not playing it every day necessarily. So for a guy who is like Chris Owings, who can fill a lot of different roles, he wasn't getting the everyday at-bats, and he wasn't quite right as well. But that means they also made quite a few moves with the bullpen. It looks like now they're rolling with those 13 pitchers, which not every team does. It's kind of a 13-12 split, depending on the team.
Right.
With the Diamondbacks, it seems as though they're going 13 pitchers on this roster. And personally, I think that's probably the way to go, because you do have so many different guys that can play so many different positions.
Let's go ahead and get into that bullpen stuff and just the starting pitching overall. We saw on Thursday some of the new additions to the bullpen didn't have very impressive debuts, I guess you could say. But they came back on Saturday, and Jake Diemann pitched on Sunday, and they bounced back from that kind of rocky start. What did you see out of these guys, Brad Ziegler, Jake Diekman, even Matt Andrews, who's had a few more reps, but he kind of settled in here this homestand against the Giants that series.
He's had two scoreless appearances.
What did you see out of those three, and then just out of the bullpen as a whole this weekend that kind of was a glimmer of like, okay, this is going to be okay?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a small sample size that it's tough. I'm still going more off of what they've done throughout the entire season. And Brad Ziegler was lights out for Miami the last couple of months there. Jake Diekman was having a really good year. Matt Andrees has been rock solid as well. Obviously, they're going to struggle. Look, this is just a big life change. You know, Jake Diekman was talking about moving his pregnant wife.
Right.
You know, he walked across the stadium.
Took the bullpen cart.
Yeah. He took the bullpen part. I'm sure he did a couple. I'm sure that's a multi-trip move there for him. But He played in the game. He had to go pick up his pregnant wife, fly her back.
And I believe he flew back on either Wednesday night or Thursday morning to be ready for that Thursday game.
Yeah, so
the travel.
You know, I mean, Andrees is coming from Florida. Brad Ziegler, who's more familiar with the team, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's coming from Florida, though, too. So, you know, give him a week to get settled in. But you see the moving pieces that can now be there. And that's one thing Hazen talked about, one thing Lovello talked about. They really relied on Brad Boxberger, on Archie Bradley, on Yoshi Hirano. And they don't want to run those guys ragged
right.
by the time it gets to playoff time. So they had some really good options now to go to give those guys some rest. And they always have talked about Brad Boxberger on no days rest, Brad Boxberger mm-hmm. on one day rest. You can then slide Archie potentially back into that closer role for a spot close if you need it. So overall, I mean, it's kind of the same opinion I had when they made the deals. They're trying to go the Kansas City Royals approach and try mm-hmm. to shorten those games. You know, we saw the starters go a little bit deeper in these games, but in case you do have a Clay Buchholz go five innings, a Robbie Ray go five innings, you are now well equipped to go ahead and handle those four innings and still be okay for the game the next day and the game after that as well.
And you mentioned the getting settled in part, like 100% agree with that. I thought it was interesting this homestand though. Yes, we've seen their stuff all season long and you're looking at that, but I thought it was interesting how like you could see how Torrey Lovello was going to be working these guys in, and he was kind of experimenting with where they might fit in different situations. We saw Jake Diekman in the ninth on Sunday. We saw mm-hmm. him, I believe it was earlier than that, on Thursday and yeah. Saturday. Just he's kind of experimenting with that, and I mean that was a decent series to kind of figure that out. Obviously it was a split there, but they're getting it there. Let's talk about the starting pitching now.
Okay.
We, last podcast, we just focused mostly on trade deadline stuff, but we didn't get to talk about Zach Greinke and the few starts that he had that were absolutely exceptional. Zach Godley now has really settled in. He's become a little bit more consistent in his appearances. He's going for his second straight win against the Phillies on Monday night. We will have updates on sports360az.com as that all unfolds with this series against the Phillies, who are number one in the National League East. So this is going to be an exciting series here. What do you see or have you seen out of Zach Greinke that is different from what we saw towards the beginning of the season?
Just consistency. You know, I think that's the biggest difference really from the first 2 years with the Diamondbacks. You would see this gem that he would throw, and then the next start would be, you know, by no means bad, but when you're signed for $32 million a year as our employer, Brad Sussmat, you know, he brings up every time.
All the time.
Every time Zach Greinke isn't absolutely perfect, people are going to go, well, why are they paying him
right,
so much?
Right.
But he's been so consistent this year. You know, looking back to June 18th was the last time he gave up three runs or more. You know, that's been over a full month. And he's just been absolutely lights out. He's keeping the pitch count low. I think that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like last year, while he was very solid, it seemed like teams could really get that pitch count going up where he's going five, six innings. Now you're seeing him just not even mess around with people. You know, a lot of three, four ball counts, and he's just moving on. So he's been really good. And then on the other end, you have Zach Godley, and we're starting to see the Zach Godley of last year as well, coming off arguably his best start of the year, seven innings pitched, two hits given up, one walk, 10 strikeouts in that win against the Texas Rangers. And he's a guy, it's so important for him and Robbie Ray for people to get guys to chase outside the zone. And that's what we've seen Zach Godley do a really good job of the last couple of starts. You're starting to see that a little bit with Robbie Ray, but not as consistently as last year. But that's really been the key for him, getting that sinker out of the zone, getting that curveball, and getting guys to chase. And he has continued. You saw kind of earlier in the year as well, he was a four-inning, a five-inning guy. Even if he wasn't giving up that many runs, he was throwing a lot of pitches. Now you're starting to see him you know, get to that six-inning, that seven-inning mark as well.
I think when we look at this pitching staff, and then as we just talked about a little bit with the bullpen, you're looking at a group of guys that your starting rotation, as Tuivasa always says, he's looking for them to go those six innings. But then you've got your guys that can be there if they do go those just those five, as you mentioned mm-hmm. earlier. So I think that I don't see very many concerns with this starting rotation at all. I don't know. Do you see any concerns as we head into this last stretch?
Not necessarily. I think
does anything make you pause?
I think they've set themselves up nicely. You know, you just don't know who that. Conceivably, if you're in a playoff series, you need, you know, it's not going to be the Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling experience of 2001 where it's just like those guys carried them. You need three, potentially four starters to be able to go, you know, especially if you do get that wild card and then you're pretty much playing from behind if you don't win that division. So you have Greinke, you have Pat Corbin, you're starting to see Zach Godley come together. Clay Buchholz has some playoff experience, but is he that guy that can go deep into the ball game? Usually he's not.
Right.
It's a very good five innings or five plus innings, but he's not a guy that can really kind of set the tone, or we haven't seen that out of him quite yet. And I think that's also by design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a late addition. And then you have Robbie Ray. You don't know which Robbie Ray is going to necessarily show up this year in the postseason. So maybe that, you know, you have your 1A, your 1B. Who's going to be kind of that next guy? It seems like it changes every week, because last week I would have said Robbie Ray.
Right.
But this week I'm now saying Zach Godley. So I think in the second half, Diamondback fans want to see one of those guys really settle out, you know, kind of be a little bit more consistent.
One of those guys being this whole rotation?
Godley, Ray, Buchholz.
Yeah.
For Buchholz, I think it's more seeing him go deeper into the games.
I agree.
But again, because the trade deadline prices were so high for that starter, that upgrade.
But I really don't think that they necessarily needed it.
I thought that the bullpen was definitely the route to go. And kind of what Hazen had said was, we're not going to make a deal unless it's a clear upgrade.
Right.
If it's going to be a Chris Archer, you're just not going to be able to make that deal. Like, few teams are have that return package makes them think about that. So I thought they went the right route. They have definitely bolstered the pitching staff as a whole.
Yes.
So we'll see.
Let's switch gears now to offense. We have to lead this off by talking about Nick Ahmed and just how he's been, I mean, offensively and as well defensively. He's probably one of the best shortstops in the game right now, just with his, I mean, you look at different guys around the league and they're flashing the leather and it's all over different outlets and they're showing highlights, but Nick Ahmed's kind of a silent stealth, I guess we can refer to it as that. He's doing it all. In his last seven games, he's got a .353 average with three doubles, two home runs, which second career two home run game, believe it was Saturday that he had that. He's got six RBIs. He's second behind Goldie with 57 RBIs on the team, and he leads the team this season with 24 doubles. So he's really producing at the plate, and he's come up in some pretty clutch moments, again, offensively and defensively. So we're seeing a lot of Nick Ahmed, and it's good to see.
And that was the thing I was going to bring up was it seems like you see him, and maybe it's kind of where he's placed in the batting order, whether it's the six or seven spot. You see the middle of the lineup guys getting on base, but maybe not kind of producing those runs quite yet. He's seen a lot of opportunities with runners in scoring position. And it seems like more often than not, he is really delivering on that. So he's always been a guy that has had a really good glove, but he's always wanted to try to be more than just a defensive shortstop.
Right.
And, you know, going into this year, you have Chris Owings, Ketel Marte, Nick Ahmed, Daniel Descalzo, like all those guys were vying for two spots up the middle. You didn't really know where Nick would kind
that
of
fall
into.
That was definitely a question. Yeah, I believe back in spring training we did discuss that.
Yeah, even. So he's really shown what he can do and been a good run producer for this team. And you're starting to see the average come up as well a little bit. But the pop that he's been able to provide, especially when, you know, Steven Souza was still trying to figure things out and AJ Pollock was out and, you know, that sort of thing. He's been a nice little addition, you know, or a nice surprise, I should say. And now all of a sudden, most of these guys are healthy. You're now going about seven deep on this lineup where it's like, okay, there are quite a few guys that can do a significant amount of damage in one at bat.
And one of those guys is David Peralta. He's hitting .293 on the season. He's tied a career high with career single season high with 17 home runs already, and we still have about, what, 2 months? I can't believe it's already August. Two-ish months left in the season. He's got 22 doubles, 4 triples, and 54 RBI on the season. And in this last series against the Giants, he went 8 for 17. He came a triple shy from the cycle in one game. And he just, like, wasn't it just last week that he had some shoulder tightness? And that wasn't anything he was concerned about. He came back out, and he's producing like crazy.
Yeah, he didn't play in either one of those Texas games, the two-game series at the beginning of the week.
And then he comes out and he has a
He has a 4-for-5 game, and he follows it up with a 3-for-4 game with 2 runs scored and a solo shot. Look, whenever you have a good Diamondbacks offensive performance, David Peralta's fingerprints are going to be all over that game, because whether it's up at the top of the lineup or he's in that 4-5 range, he's just been in a, like Nick Ahmed, he's been in a lot of situations where he's been able to produce a lot of runs, and it's really just kind of like a very simple thing for him right now, see ball, hit ball. And, you know, at some point you kind of expect him maybe to cool off at points. And really the only times he hasn't been just, you know, playing with his hair on fire is when he's battling that shoulder tightness or, you know,
just a day off.
Yeah, just a little bit of wear and tear. But he's been a pleasant surprise in terms of, you know, when he has to take that scheduled off day to get other guys reps. That hasn't messed with his rhythm. Mm-hmm. He's still able to come back and play really, really well, not just offensively, but defensively as well.
Another guy that stood out offensively, Steven Souza Jr. He's come off the DL, his second trip to the DL this season. And again, he's been producing. He has hit safely in 10 of his last 12 games. In those 12, he's been batting at .355 with 4 doubles, a triple, 2 home runs, and 13 RBIs. I think that when they brought on John Jay to kind of bolster that position with the loss of Steven Souza Jr., it was a great move, and Jay's been still doing something for the Diamondbacks. But to have Souza Jr. come back in here and do what they really brought him in at the beginning of the season from spring training to do, I think after the trade deadline, we're seeing the vision of what Mike Hazen intended for this 2018 Diamondbacks
Precisely.
Team really come full circle.
Absolutely. And Diamondbacks fans might have been frustrated at the beginning of that, you know, with his struggles, and look, he just wasn't right.
No, like, and you can't help the injury.
Yeah, he wasn't right.
It's not like he chose that.
When you just look at the splits, though, it's impressive. So he didn't play at all in April. May, he was batting .163. July, a .292 clip in 72 at-bats, and now hitting .273 here in August. So you're seeing a rough May still, you know, it's still kind of there within his numbers, but he's really hitting at a very high rate and getting on base a lot. And that wasn't necessarily his strength last year. His strength was the power numbers and producing those runs. And, I remember doing a hit with Brad on his show during spring training, right after they made the trade for him. And he's like, you know, so kind of give me the scouting report. And I gave him the power numbers and everything. He's like, yeah, but it seems kind of like he has a hole in his swing. Like he's hitting, like, you know, in the .220, .230 range. He's not doing that right now.
Right.
He's getting on base consistently. And you're also seeing the power happen. And it may be a little bit more gaps than true home runs right now, but you're starting to see that home run power come in as well.
And you see those nights when everything clicks. And Torrevo normally starts off his pro scheme press conferences saying, everything was clicking for us tonight. And
they were playing downhill.
They were playing downhill baseball. But then you have those nights where it doesn't. And for the Diamondbacks on Sunday against the Giants, that wasn't clicking. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that the pitching was completely off. Robbie Ray didn't have his best start there, but it wasn't a whole bunch of the pitching, which that was the key on Thursday, was the bullpen kind of blundered there a little bit. But when everything clicks for the Diamondbacks, this team is amazing. I mean, they're not Red Sox 2018 clicking all the time like the Red Sox are, which... But that doesn't always happen. That's not
that's
typical. So I think that, like I said, I think things are really coming together the way Hazen had initially envisioned them. And as long as people are staying healthy, everyone's staying healthy and doing their job and focusing on their job and getting it done, I think everything's good here.
Yeah, I absolutely. And I think it's going to be a key next couple of weeks for the Diamondbacks. They are facing off against Philadelphia, as you said, the leaders in a tough NL East. There are quite a few really good teams there.
Let's just say the National League. We're just going to leave it at the National League as tough period this season.
But then after that, so we look at the rest of August.
And which is going to fly by. We know it will.
Yeah, and there, but there's an interesting little stretch here. You're at Cincinnati, at Texas, at San Diego, home against the Angels, and then you have the Mariners.
You've got to capitalize on
before that. Before the Mariners, is there any team that you're really intimidated if you're the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, no, not at all. Maybe seeing as, I mean, when was the last time the Angels were in town at Chase Field? Seeing how they fare in Chase Field, that would be my one that I marked to say I'm going to keep an eye on that. But other than that, I'm expecting...
The news for the Angels lately has been that Mike Socha might be out. So that's a good indicator of how their season's
been
going.
That's true.
So you look on the other end with the Dodgers coming up. They just came off of a series loss against the Astros.
Right.
They're going to Oakland, which is
playing very good baseball.
They're at Colorado, which isn't easy. Home against the Giants, at the Mariners, home against the Cardinals, home against the Padres, and then home against the Rangers. So... They're splitting hairs right now in the NL West. And again, you want to win that division. You don't want to have to deal with that wild card game. As fun as that game was for Diamondback fans, you were then playing from behind once you got to LA.
Yeah.
So this is a potentially soft part of the
schedule. But you've got to keep an eye on the Rockies, too. You mentioned the Dodgers, but you've got to keep an eye on the Rockies there, too, to take that West lead. I mean... Is the Rockies' schedule looking hard as well?
And to a degree, the Giants as well. I mean, the Giants have been in striking. If they could really go on a run, I mean, they could be.
If they put things together like they have.
Yeah. So, you know, the NL West has just been a bit of a gauntlet, and
it's been fun though. It's exciting baseball.
And they don't. When you look at the records, like it's not very impressive, but they're cannibalizing each other.
Right.
Like they're just going through. For the Rockies, they are. Hosting the Pirates, then taking on the Dodgers, at the Astros, at the Braves, a very good young Braves team.
There with the Phillies in the East.
Hosting the Padres, and then hosting the Cardinals, and then they're in Anaheim.
So you really do, if you're the Diamondbacks, you really are looking at this next stretch and saying, all right, it's time to put the Rockets on and get going here.
Yeah, set the tone against the Phillies. If they can get away there with a series win there, then it's... Just go play some baseball. Like on paper, the better team is the Diamondbacks for pretty much all of those series for the rest of August, and then it'll be.
If they can do it though, September will be a maybe. I mean, September's still going to be a tough month, but
who the heck knows? I keep wanting to say that there won't be races, but there are always races in September. So,
baseball.
But this is a time for the Diamondbacks. They could take advantage and really. Get that cushion they had at the beginning of the year where if you have maybe not a rough September to the level of a rough May that they had, but any breathing room is going to be helpful as you're making a playoff push.
Before we send it out here, got to mention Paul Goldschmidt hitting his 200th home run on Friday against the Giants. He's joins Luis Gonzalez as the only Diamondbacks to hit 200 plus home runs. It was 6 years and one day after his first career home run that he hit his 200th career home run. His first career home run was on August 2nd, 2011. It was also against the Giants. So 6 years and one day later, he hits his 200th home run in front of the Diamondbacks fans at Chase Field.
And I got to say, spent a little, not a ton, but a little bit of time with Luis at the alumni game this weekend. And he obviously just had nothing but high praise.
Of course.
For Paul Goldschmidt. Paul also tied Luis's Chase Field record
at 95,
at 95, and pretty much what he was saying was just like, yeah, it's not going to be long before
he surpasses.
So it's it's one of those things where you talk to his teammates and covering him consistently now for the last 2 years, like he'll do some of these things and it's just kind of everyday Paul Goldschmidt, and you don't
realize the impressive
resume that he's
he
done.
Kind of expects that out of himself, I think. Speaking of that alumni game, you were out there on Saturday. You got the chance to catch up with some Diamondbacks legends.
Yeah, so was able to catch up with Andy Stankiewicz, who
GCU baseball head coach,
who you know well and have covered.
Fun
the
team
reason
to cover.
I wanted to get Andy was because he has ties to the Diamondbacks. He has ties to GCU. He has a lot of ties over to ASU. He played there. His son played for the baseball team. His daughter played
for the softball team
over there. He also coached two guys that we covered pretty extensively at the high school level, Nolan Gorman, Matthew Libertor with USA Baseball. They're now first-round picks, so I got to catch up with him on all of those things. And, yeah, he's just a guy that's really tapped in when it comes to Arizona baseball.
Here's a listen.
Back here at Chase Field, what's it like to be with so many of your old teammates and so many great former Diamondbacks?
Oh, it's fun. It's always good to get out here. As you get older, you realize you don't really move as well as you used to, and you always regret like not working out before this day. Then you get here and you're like, why didn't I do some working out before? But it's all right. It's all fun. Guys are great. It's great to see the guys you played with and the guys that been a big part of this community, you know, for so many years now. So it's just it's a great experience. It's we're really obviously very appreciative of Diamondbacks putting this together.
You mentioned the community. I mean, the Stankiewicz family is so embedded in the baseball and softball community in Arizona. Just what does that community mean to you and your family?
Well, I think we've been here a while now, and it's been a great place to grow our children, right? And then our oldest son played at ASU. I coached at ASU, and my daughter had a really great, nice career there at ASU as well, softball. And so, my son is now playing with me over at GCU, and we have a younger daughter that's kind of coming up to the softball ranks as well. And so, Phoenix is a great town. It's obviously really family oriented. You know, it's a great sense of community, and we're just again just really proud to be a part of it as a family, and then proud to be a baseball softball family.
What are you looking forward to most about this upcoming GCU season?
Well, we got to keep moving forward. We got to keep getting the program's got to grow. It's got to get better. You know, we got to get better on the field. We just got to keep it moving. We got a beautiful stadium there. It's really a wonderful place to come watch a ball game. So we got to generate that even more fan interest. Get some. Baseball, the baseball community in the Valley, we got to get them over to watch our ball games. And so we just got to keep, we feel good about the foundation. We just got to keep it moving.
You were able to coach two Arizona guys who were drafted in the first round this year, and Nolan Gorman and Matthew Libertor. Can you comment just on kind of the type of ball players they are and the futures that they might have?
Well, the future's bright. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out. You know, I got a chance to coach them for with the USA 18U national team and spend extended time with them. And I'm most proud of who they are. Obviously, they're very skilled young men, and they're gonna do wonderful in the game. But both of them down to earth, great workers, great teammates. Really pleased with the way how mature they were. You know, as a teenage boys, that young men that have been given a lot, they stayed humble. You know, they're really down to earth young men. And I'm just proud to say that I got a brief moment with him.
And I also got to catch up with David DeLucci, one of the guys who was there from the beginning. He was on that World Series team. Honestly, he still looks like he can play. And fun fact, actually,
hey,
my first ever autograph. A very
a
young,
kid.
I don't really want to do the math right now, but a very young Jordan Hamm got an autograph from David DeLucci, and that was his first ever baseball autograph.
So you were geeking out? A little bit?
Not necessarily, but it was definitely fun to catch up with him. Just, you know, there were so many names and at that game where it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, that guy, like, in his heyday, like, he was
That's
a really
good
Diamondbacks player. And the cool, I think one of the cooler parts of that is they use all the guys' walk-up songs when they come out.
Yes, I did see that.
So that triggered kind of the most memories for me. When you have a Steve Finley or a Luis Gonzalez walking up, it's like, oh yeah, like this was totally his song. Like, and then they really play it up, but the Diamondbacks definitely do a nice job with their alumni game. So here's David DeLucci.
Welcome back to Chase Field. Just what's it like getting back with some of your former teammates and other former Diamondbacks?
Oh, it's always great to get back to them, especially here with the best fans in baseball, and to see the guys that you spent every day with in the clubhouse and playing and competing with on the field. It's a wonderful feeling. You immediately go back to your playing days, and it's almost like we don't skip a beat. We start telling jokes and stories, and it's wonderful. I'm glad the D-backs do this.
Is there any particular memory or story that jumps out when you took the field for the first time today?
for me in 1998 to come out here, a brand new stadium, a new team. There were a lot of question marks. Some other teams and fans in the league did not want Arizona to be in the major leagues, and to come out here, our fan support was unbelievable. And I remember the first game I ran out on the field just to feel the stadium vibrate, and the fans behind us was incredible. I'll never forget that. And to play in front of them day in and day out, and they appreciate our efforts, it was really, really special.
As a guy who's been there from the beginning, just how have you seen this franchise continue to grow after 20 years?
Well, I think that in the beginning, there was a standard set that I'm very proud to be a part of. And the fact that they brought in class individuals. They brought in character players that were also good on the field, but even better off the field. And I think that's the Arizona Diamondback way, and it hasn't changed throughout the years. And I think they're as classy now as they were back then, and they're very successful. So it's easy to pull for a Diamondbacks team. It doesn't matter what year it is, but to see the success they're having this year, the way they're playing, it's an awesome race that they're in, and their good guys are easy to pull for.
That's what we've got for you with Diamonds on the Desert this week. Be sure to keep it on sports360az.com. We'll be plugged into this Phillies series, and the rest of the week we'll be back here next week with more Diamondbacks news on Diamonds in the Desert.